when I had an opportunity to secure a late entry into the Lake Sonoma 50, I instantly decided I was going to reroute our planned family Griswold vacation. Now, despite living just a few hours away from Yosemite Falls, El Capitan, Half Dome, I'd waited, well, my whole life, 40 years to see them. So, I think my lovely wife and my three children, none over the age of 7, could wait a few more days. Now, talking to other ultra runners, I pretty much heard like two general things about the Lake Sonoma 50. The first was that it was absolutely beautiful. The second was that as gorgeous as it was even more of a ball buster in every sense of the word. The 50-mile course has 10,500 feet of elevation gain and has been described, this is a quote that a lot of ultra runners have used, and it wasn't the first time I heard. I've heard it several times through the course of the weekend. Death by a million paper cuts. Sounds nice. The entire course is either up or down. That's why they say this. But there's only a few significant climbs, right? So it can be very deceiving. Yet you are constantly grinding away, tearing away the quads, the hammies. Boom, one after another, pick your poison. Now, I grew up in the Bay Area and for the most part lived on the peninsula my entire life. Yet shockingly, just like Yosemite, I've never really been to Sonoma. I've driven through Sonoma, but I haven't indulged in everything that it has to offer. So, packed up the Airstream, loaded three kids, the wife, hot Spanish au pair, and we were off for an adventure. Now, my preconceived judgments were pretty right on as we rolled into the Northern California wine country. It was beautiful. The rolling green hills are surrounded by one recognizable vineyard after another. Well, that might be an indication that I drink too much wine. But unfortunately, we missed the pre-race dinner. We were able to get to the campsite just in time as the sun was setting. Fired up the fire pit and crushed my wife made an unbelievable pre-race spread of the quinoa, rice, veggies. And of course, well, we had to down a bottle of Pinot Noir. We were in Sonoma. I felt it was the right thing to do. So my 7-year-old daughter, Peanut, now she slept in the bed with me, which is very normal. I'm very used to it at this point. One of three children at least climbing on me through the course of the night. But the issue was she had the flu. And, well, she rucky-chuckied throughout the course of the entire night. Most likely from the time I rolled into the rack at about 10 o'clock, p.m. to the time I got up about 5 a.m., I'd say I logged maybe a solid 2 hours. That's being generous. I'd say an hour and a half of shut-eye. Now, I usually don't sleep all that well the night before races, but obviously this was enhanced by the barfing barrage. Speaking to experts over the years, it doesn't trip me out at all. Now, there's people that have a lot more expertise in this area, say, than I do. But I've always noticed that I've been totally unaffected if I don't sleep well before a race or if I really do sleep well before the race. Now, the bottom line is, supposedly, it's the sleep you get 2 nights before the race that is the most important. The same is true with the carb loading, too. Now, when I got up in the morning, immediately steamed the water on the pot, inserted a couple packets of instant coffee into the coffee cup, and well, just kind of took in the aroma of the always helps start the interior early morning release system, which usually the body is not accustomed to starting at that hour. Threw down a banana, yogurt, bowl of oatmeal, pounded the cup of coffee, and dropped the kids off at the pool and took off for the start line. My wife gave me a ride over there. The race started at 6:30, so by the time I actually pulled into the parking lot, it was 6:15. I imagine, I don't know if it was by coincidence or not, but it was the coolest thing I'd ever received, the coolest number I ever received at the check-in. I got number 22. So I got to imagine there was a baseball fan that was handing out the numbers. I safety pinned it to my shorts, snapped a quick pic with the lake in the background. Looked for and found like Franz Dill, who was my ultra running coach, and who I was planning on running the first part of the race with, at least. And Franz, the man, he's the president of the Coastside Runners Club based in Half Moon Bay. I first met him a couple years ago on the Western States training run. And we quickly figured out our Half Moon Bay connection. Kids went to the same school. And look, it was my first training run. So I was just bombarding him with questions all about ultramarathon, all about the Western States. I was really, really intrigued and wanted to try to get back as much information as possible. And at the time, I had yet to even do an ultra. I the Way Too Cool 50K was just a couple weeks away, but I really didn't know anything about the sport. Now, Franz, if you've ever met him, look, this dude represents everything that is right with ultra running. He has a passion for running that you can almost physically see radiate through him. His willingness and ability to vary his pace and engage in both fast and slow runners, answer questions, share his experiences. He's peppering questions back at you or the other runner, acting like he's interested. He seems interested, all while in the middle of slaughtering a 20% grade hill. Guy's incredible. He embodies everything. The perfect blend of running with that competitive edge, yet it's not at the expense of compromising sort of the core values of the sport. And by the way, did I mention he is an absolute badass? He is just one of a couple hundred people to ever complete the Grand Slam of ultra running, which is doing the four oldest 100-mile races in the United States all within just months of each other. I couldn't even imagine. There's nothing like the start of an ultra race, unlike an Ironman, which usually has 3,000 competitors in the water. There's thousands of spectators, super loud music, sponsor banners, elaborate starting chute. Ultras seem to be, a bit more reserved. Now, usually just a few hundred racers standing around, right, in an area that, eventually people just start running. Other than race director, Tropical John Medinger, who was flowing knowledge and truth, a few inspirational messages on the mic, this was Lake Sonoma, just a classic ultra send-off. I think a whistle went off, and, we started running. Franz and I, we ran together for most of the race at Way Too Cool, so we figured we'd stick together unless one of us started feeling sexy and decided to open it up. But it was supposed to rain that day, and temperatures were going to be in the low 60s. So I started with a kind of a light jacket, and the rain held off, especially in the first part. And it was surprisingly humid. I mean, just hot. So by the time we got to Warm Springs Creek aid station, about 11.6, I was freaking drenched. Both with my wife, Tara, and Franz's wife, Jen, they were at the aid station. And when we pulled in, Tara looked at me like she'd seen a ghost. Jen has a tremendous amount of experience crewing for Franz over the years. And having Tara shadow her around for the day, gaining knowledge, experience, it was huge. Now, not only just for Lake Sonoma, but for Western States coming up or any subsequent race that I'll even do in the future. Now, although I was sweating like a pig in heat, I felt fine. Yet, when I saw Jen give me the same look that Tara did, I thought I was fucked. To lose that much fluid, barely 20% into the race, makes it nearly impossible to replace. So judging by their reactions, I decided to take my time, spend a couple more minutes rehydrating, fire down a PB&J. Franz, who I pulled in the aid station with, he bolted. He was gone at least a couple minutes before me. I spent the next, 14 miles or so running alone in solitude. Now, I had my headphones, and that's sort of the time where you bust them out, right? I had them with me, but I never put them on. I got so locked in to the gorgeous Lake Sonoma scenery. It just completely captivated me. Cruise along the single track trail situated above the lake. There's little ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs and crossing creeks and looking down in the mist and the fog. It was almost as if I'd become one with the mountain, one with the lake. Corny sounding shit, I get it. But I was completely blown away. I pulled into No Name Flat at mile 25.2. Feeling surprisingly pretty good. Because all the fluid I lost in the first 11 miles, I was very conservative while I was experiencing my zen-like state. Filled the bottles, crushed another PB&J, slammed an ice-cold aluminum bottle of Coke that Tara had brought me. That was absolute ecstasy. Oh, that tasted good. Before I got to mile, I think it was like 32.8. There was a little aid station there. I had caught up with Franz and a few other runners. So now I was running a little bit of a pack. It was nice. We were leapfrogging at each other. It was almost like we were running a pace line, as if we were on bikes. And we all pulled into Warm Springs Creek at mile 38 about the same time. Now, there's a point, I think, in every endurance race that I've ever done when the race really begins for each individual. I don't think you can determine that exact point for any race. Yeah, I don't think you can. Each race provides its own layout. And it's almost as if it has its own rules and its own idea of when the actual race, quote-unquote race, is going to start. I believe it coincides with your current effort at the time, what you feel like you have left in the tank, and really who's around you. To that point, at the beginning of the race, I'd run socially with Franz, and then I'd run very comfortably alone, and I'd run with a pack that we all pulled into the aid station at the same time. All day, I take my aid stations very meticulously, but when I got to mile 38, I blew through it. I was gone. Barely filled my water bottles. Didn't even eat anything. See ya. Now, I didn't plan on making any sort of move at mile 38, but sometimes you just got to go with your gut. Just felt it. I had 12 miles to go. Nut crunching time. When I read the book Iron Wars by Matt Fitzgerald, fantastic book, by the way. Highly recommend it. I remember it was either Dave Scott or Mark Allen, one of the two of them, was talking. They were talking about when they wanted to go faster, when they wanted to pick up the pace later in the race. They talked about pumping their arms and getting up on their toes. So, well, I went for it. Started pumping my arms a little more. I got up on my toes, started crushing some of the uphills, and I was moving. Over the course of the next 6 miles, I not only dropped the crew that I was running with, but I proceeded to pass at least another 6 to 10 runners. Then I got to about mile 44 and realized I downed both water bottles. I didn't have an ounce of nutrition on me. I still had another mile and a half to go to the next aid station. It was like I was naked out in the forest all alone, and it was not a good feeling. My pace started to dramatically slow. Ugh. I literally started to feel nauseous, sick to my stomach. A couple guys passed me back that I had passed now. And really, I basically rolled into the Island View Camp aid station at mile 45.5. My tongue's wagging out of my mouth. It's like a bulldog on a hot day. There were at least 7 or 8 runners at Island Camp, and nobody really seemed like to be in any sort of hurry when they got there. It was a long time between aid stations before that, almost 8 miles. So we were just 4.5 miles, though, from the finish line. But the 45.5 miles, 10,000 feet of relentless climbing and descent, I think, had finally sort of taken its toll on everybody. And I cruised out of there, slammed another Coke. Well, actually slammed 2 more Cokes. The funny thing is, I don't even drink soda. Race day, though, oh, I'll get my Coke. Got up on my toes once more, started pumping the arms, and I was cruising. Right up to the point where I felt a small cramp in my right quad a couple miles into that last stretch. And I slowed down a bit. Didn't really help. The cramp continued to escalate, and finally, it shot up to my groin, then wrapped around into my hamstring. I had no choice but to stop and let it dissipate. I couldn't move. Now, thankfully, it subsided in under a minute. And being just 2 miles from the finish line, I could hear a few runners hot on my ass coming behind me. I was going to do everything I could to hold them off. My only choice, though, if I wanted to hold them off, was to live on the QGH cramping edge. That's right, the quad groin hammy cramping edge. It's a tough place to live. But I set up camp. Was able to hold them off, cross the finish line, 8 hours and 35 minutes after we had begun. That was good for 43rd overall. Now, in the grand scheme of things, I don't really give a rat's ass where I place in a race. I really don't. This is not my profession. And fortunately, I do not have to rely on endurance sports to feed my family. Yet, I do feel like I have a responsibility, not only to myself, but to my kids, to put forth my best effort I have in me on that given day. I constantly preach to my children, the single most important thing in any sport is effort. If I'm not practicing what I preach, my words don't carry the same sort of weight. Now, I was never the most talented baseball player at any level. But there's no doubt in my mind that my effort afforded me an opportunity to make a career playing a game. The only way for us as human beings to realize our true potential is to push the limits. And it's not just to find the boundaries. Sometimes we need to cross them. The combo of the finisher jackets, the tamales, oh, the tamales, and the ice-cold beer at the end of the race were probably the greatest post-race trifecta I've ever received. All in all, Tropical John and his crew, thank you to all the volunteers. What an incredible, incredible race. If you ever have the desire to run 50 miles and see if you can survive death by a million paper cuts, Lake Sonoma 50 is definitely for you.